Stand by all NBC stations. Stand by all NBC stations. In 1 minute, we will bring you a 20-minute hotline news special on Crisis in Cuba Continued. The program will include spots from Miami, Washington, and the United Nations. In 40 seconds, a 20-minute hotline special on Crisis in Cuba continued. The program will include reports from Miami, Washington, and the United Nations. In 30 seconds, a 20-minute hotline special from NBC News. It will include reports from Miami, Washington, and the United Nations. In 15 seconds, a 20-minute hotline special from NBC News. In 10 seconds. In 5 seconds. NBC News presents a special report on Crisis in Cuba Continued. Last Monday, anti-communist Cubans invaded the southern coast of Cuba. They hit the beaches at the Bay of Cochillas, 90 miles southeast of Havana. Their objective was to topple the communist-dominated government of Fidel Castro. Direct information has been sketchy. The Castro government has claimed that the invasion was crushed, but the rebels deny this claim. They say that while they have lost the beachhead, the rebel troops have melted into the Escambray Mountains to join with guerrillas that already have been there. Today, there were a series of rapid-fire developments in the Cuban crisis. First, the Castro radio claimed that the rebels were crushed. But a rebel radio broadcast from the Escambray Mountains that the invaders had joined guerrillas in the mountains. Rebel sources also said that a major commando force of 2,500 men had not been committed to the battle. In the afternoon, President Kennedy spoke before the American Society of Newspaper Editors. He served notice that American restraint in the face of communist penetration of this hemisphere is not inexhaustible. And he made plain that the United States would act on its own against Cuban communists, if necessary, to protect our security. There were other developments. After Mr. Kennedy's talk, the White House announced that José Miró Cardona and other members of the Cuban Revolutionary Council had met secretly with President Kennedy yesterday. The rebels wanted the president to use his influence to get the Organization of American States to assure humane treatment for rebels taken prisoner by Castro forces. Mr. Kennedy reportedly said he would attempt to use his influence in the matter. But there have been reports that Castro firing squads have executed 12 persons, including a number of underground leaders. Now, direct reports on today's developments. First, NBC News White House correspondent Sander Van Oker.
An air of expectancy filled the ballroom of the Statler Hotel here this afternoon as members of the American Society of Newspaper Editors waited for President Kennedy to arrive. There were no advances on what he would say. The text arrived with him at 2 minutes before two. Yet everyone in the room knew the president would speak about Cuba. But just what he would say was a carefully kept secret. At 1 minute after two, the television cameras were trained on the speaker's rostrum. The radio networks opened up. Turner Catledge, managing editor of the New York Times, and the society's president, rose and said simply, "Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States." What follows is part of what the president said.
On that unhappy island, as in so many other arenas of the contest for freedom, the news has grown worse instead of better. I have emphasized before that this was a struggle of Cuban patriots against a Cuban dictator. While we could not be expected to hide our sympathies, we made it repeatedly clear that the armed forces of this country would not intervene in any way. Any unilateral American intervention in the absence of an external attack upon ourselves or an ally would have been contrary to our traditions and to our international obligations. But let the record show that our restraint is not inexhaustible. Should it ever appear that the inter-American doctrine of non-interference merely conceals or excuses a policy of non-action, if the nations of this hemisphere should fail to meet their commitments against outside communist penetration, then I want it clearly understood that this government will not hesitate in meeting its primary obligations, which are to the security of our nation. Should that time ever come, we do not intend to be lectured on intervention by those whose character was stamped for all time on the bloody streets of Budapest. Mr. Castro has said that these were mercenaries. According to press reports, the final message to be relayed from the refugee forces on the beach came from the rebel commander when asked if he wished to be evacuated. His answer was, "I will never leave this country." That is not the reply of a mercenary. He has gone now to join in the mountains countless other guerrilla fighters who are equally determined that the dedication of those who gave their lives shall not be forgotten and that Cuba must not be abandoned to the communists. And we do not intend to abandon it either. The Cuban people have not yet spoken their final piece, and I have no doubt that they and the Revolutionary Council, led by Dr. Cardona, and members of the families of the Revolutionary Council, I am informed by the doctor yesterday, are involved themselves in the islands, will continue to speak up for a free and independent Cuba. The message of Cuba, of Laos, of the rising din of communist voices in Asia and Latin America, these messages are all the same. The complacent, the self-indulgent, the sore societies are about to be swept away with the debris of history. Only the strong, only the industrious, only the determined, only the courageous, only the visionary who determine the real nature of our struggle can possibly survive. We intend to profit from this lesson. We intend to re-examine and reorient our forces of all kinds, our tactics, and our institutions here in this community. We intend to intensify our efforts for a struggle in many ways more difficult than war, where disappointment will often accompany us. For I am convinced that we in this country and in the free world possess the necessary resources and the skill and the added strength that comes from a belief in the freedom of man. And I am equally convinced that history will record the fact that this bitter struggle reached its climax in the late 1950s and the early 1960s. Let me then make clear, as the President of the United States, that I am determined upon our system's survival and success, regardless of the cost and regardless of the peril.
The President's manner was sober and deliberate. He was careful as he read from his text. He did not stumble in his reading. He used his right index finger to follow the words. The first time we have ever seen him do this, an indication he did not want a single misstatement to be made. But words, the President is convinced, will not be enough. He's preparing to move. But in what manner? Since the President warned Latin American nations that they have more to fear from Castro than we do, it suggests that he wants to try and get a common hemisphere front to move against Castro. This means he'll probably call shortly for a meeting at the ministerial level of the Organization of American States to consider ways to deal with the problem posed by further communist subversion of Cuba. If other nations in this hemisphere want to join with us, well and good. If they do not, then it's to be regretted. But it will not deter us from acting like a great power to safeguard our national interest and remain the master in our own hemisphere. The Washington Post sums it up in its lead editorial for tomorrow morning, which comments on the President's speech. Says the Post, "One lesson of the operation in Cuba is the extent to which communist arms and training already have been consolidated there so as to imperil defections and afford a base for penetrations elsewhere. That fact gives full warrant to Mr. Kennedy's warning that this country will act with its neighbors if possible, but by itself if necessary, to protect its own security in the hemisphere. This was the first time that the warning has been so clearly stated, but the pose is not in itself belligerent. Mr. Kennedy has merely reaffirmed a basic, historical American interest. This country cannot allow an upset of the power balance or domination of Cuba by a hostile system. And that editorial from the Washington Post sums up the attitude which is prevalent throughout official Washington tonight. Sandra Van Oker, NBC White House correspondent, reporting from Washington.
Later, word came that Miro Cardona and his Revolutionary Council were not available. Rebel headquarters told NBC reporters in Miami that the council may actually be en route to Cuba. One report said that Miro Cardona plans to broadcast from the Escambray radio later tonight and announce the establishment of a provisional government. Meanwhile, what has happened to Fidel Castro? There are rumors about that, too. Here's a report from NBC correspondent Bill Ryan at Rebel headquarters in Miami.
This has been an unusual day for the reporters who've been covering the anti-Castro rebellion from Miami. For the first time since the fighting started on the mainland of Cuba early Monday morning, we have been called into a regular news conference. We have had a source which could be named and to which stories could be attributed. The source has given us reports which are still unconfirmed but seem authoritative on items ranging from the effects of the fighting on Fidel Castro to exactly what the rebels were trying to accomplish on the Cuban mainland and claims that they were successful in those attempts. The source is a Miami resident and an American, Wendell Rollison, who has long been active in Cuban affairs, who was a supporter of Fidel Castro and a fundraiser for his cause, but who now works with those who oppose Castro because the Cuban prime minister has violated the spirit of the revolution. Rollison told us today that Castro was hurt, either physically or mentally, by the explosion of a bomb which went off near him on Monday in the early hours of the fighting. That, according to Rollison, is the reason why the Cuban premier did not make any of the public appearances of which he is so fond, why he did not go on Cuban radio or television to personally claim a victory over the rebels. Tonight, within the hour, there was a test of the story that Castro was incapable of making public appearances, a rally at Havana University, the type of thing ideal for a four-hour Castro harangue. At a secret rebel radio listening post in Miami from which this report comes, Cuban refugees heard Havana radio announce the tales of the rally, one of which does that the Cuban prime minister would not appear. The Cuban radio also said it could not give any reason for the failure of Premier Castro to make that appearance. We are also told from other rebel listening posts of action on the north coast of Cuba near Matanzas, about 100 miles from Havana, two ships offshore. There may be a possible landing here. We do not yet know. Bill Ryan, NBC News, Miami.
The claims and counterclaims continue. Despite the Castro radio saying the revolution has been crushed, the rebels deny it. But if the revolt did go wrong, why? A report on that from another NBC correspondent, Herbert Kaplow in Miami.
We continue to get very little verified information here of the Cuban situation and very much misinformation, but it seems clear that the Castro regime is still in power, and in Havana tonight, in a demonstration, will try to proclaim its victory. Rebel supporters in Miami, meanwhile, try to salvage some gains out of this past week by saying the main part of the landing parties did make contact with anti-Castro fighters in the hills, and this was an important objective of the mission. Likewise, they talk of other landings, but they remain unverified. There are only a few reliable bits of information about all of this, but enough perhaps to reconstruct with some assumption some of what happened this week. The number of men landed wasn't high, probably a few hundred. Not a massive invasion, as it was permitted to become in its image. Permitted, perhaps because we and the rebels hoped it could be played both ways. That it would be small enough so we could say, as we now do, that it was not the real push. Big enough so it would inspire people inside Cuba to rise up and join the invaders. But some necessary complementary coordination was lacking. Important underground elements in Cuba who could have helped were not informed about the landings beforehand, and there was no general uprising which they might have helped stimulate. And so tonight, the United States, in its support of the rebels, is stuck with egg on its face in the international propaganda forum. The small landing expeditions were pictured as a massive invasion that failed. This is not the end by any means, but it is awfully uncomfortable at the moment. A large crowd of Cuban exiles is gathered in front of this hotel tonight, demonstrating its opposition to Fidel Castro and its support of the United States. The exiles chose this time and place for such a demonstration because a dinner is being given here tonight for Jose Mora, Secretary General of the Organization of American States. It's an orderly, friendly crowd, now somewhat disappointed that the landings of anti-Castro forces early in the week did not achieve the utmost and topple Fidel Castro from his perch of power. Herbert Kaplow, NBC News in Miami.
The Battle of Cuba isn't being fought only on that island's beaches or on its rugged mountains and tangled brush. It's also being fought with courteous words and rapier-like debating skill in the cavernous councils of the United Nations. The antagonists are Cuban Ambassador Raul Roa and United States Ambassador Adlai Stevenson. What's happening there? A report from NBC's United Nations correspondent, Pauline Frederick.
The UN Political Committee tonight is going into its final round of debate on the Cuban situation. American Delegate Stevenson has just begun to speak. Two resolutions are competing for support, both Latin American. Mr. Stevenson is announcing support of the seven-nation draft that exhorts the nations of the Organization of American States to assist in a peaceful settlement, calls on all nations to abstain from aggravating the situation. The resolution Mr. Stevenson opposes was introduced by Mexico. It reaffirms the principle of non-intervention and the obligation of UN members not to encourage or promote civil strife in other states. It also calls for an end to the fighting and a peaceful settlement. Mexican Delegate Nervo made a last-minute appeal to the United States and to Ambassador Stevenson personally to back his resolution. The Mexican said he recognized the obligation of members of the Organization of American States to deal with the crisis in this hemisphere, but there was an obligation on all members of the UN to bring an end to this bloodshed which threatens the peace. Nervo asked for priority on voting for his resolution, but that voting may not come until tomorrow. For one thing, Soviet Delegate Zorin has been repeating all his charges that the invasion of Cuba was launched from the United States and Guatemala with American naval and air support. And the purpose, he said, was to stifle the revolution of the Cuban people. Zorin declared that only one man, no nation, had so far backed the American charge of communist penetration in Cuba. He said the man represented no one. Of course, he meant nationalist Chinese Delegate Chiang. Zorin demanded condemnation of the United States. Earlier, Guatemala charged that Russian, Czech, and Chinese communists were fighting with Castro forces in Cuba. Another reason why the vote may not come until tomorrow is that some African and Asian states would like to round up more support for the Mexican proposal. They say the other Latin American resolution, supported by the United States, is an aspirin tablet for cancer. Even when the political committee does finish with this subject, it will then have to go into the General Assembly itself, where charges and countercharges will be repeated. And after that, it is fully expected the Soviet Union will bring the Cuban question into the Security Council. Charges of intervention against the United States are too rich a propaganda retaliation for Hungary and other communist depredations to be dropped quickly. This is Pauline Frederick, NBC News at the United Nations.
There also were other places where the Battle of Cuba was being fought. The World Press, for one. Western newspapers in Europe called the apparent defeat of the invaders a setback for President Kennedy. The communist press called it a victory for peace-loving people. And some communist commentators warned that U.S. aid to the anti-Castro Cubans could bring the menace of nuclear war. All over the world, there were anti-American demonstrations. Italy, India, Romania, not to mention the demonstration Monday at the American Embassy in Moscow. Late today, President Kennedy invited former Vice President Richard Nixon to the White House to fill Nixon in on the Cuban situation and other problems. Neither man had any comment afterward. One other development came from Hamilton, Bermuda. The British Navy has ordered two small destroyers to prepare to leave for Cuba if they are needed to protect the interests of British subjects in Cuba. And moments ago, several late developments. Telephone communications were restored with Havana tonight for the first time since early Monday morning when the Castro government shut down all facilities because of the invasion by rebel forces. The overseas chief operator at New York telephone headquarters reported that service was resumed to Havana shortly after 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. The chief operator said first indications were that telephone connections to Havana were proceeding normally. Regular service had been cut off by Havana early Monday morning without explanation from the Havana Exchange. The British news agency, Reuters, says unconfirmed reports filtering into this tense capital tonight said fighting in Matanzas province had cost thousands of lives. A complete statement on the battle, promised by the Castro regime, was still awaited, and the fate of Saturday's landings in Oriente and Pinar del Rio were unknown. But the outstanding fact in all of today's developments is President Kennedy's blunt warning. He declared emphatically that if the nations of the Western Hemisphere fail to meet their commitments against outside communist penetration, then the United States government will not hesitate to meet its obligations to ensure the security of this nation. And that, as of this moment, is where we stand with the Cuban crisis. This is Fleetwood reporting for NBC News. This special report was produced by NBC News. Production supervisor, Ray Hassan. This is the NBC Radio Network.